This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, sorry for the interruption. My name is Alejandro.
And my name is Carlos.
We are not gonna lie to you, we are not here selling candy for no school basketball team. In fact, I don't even go to school, and if you want me back in school today, I got candy for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Joining me, as always, Shamila Ganesan and Arvin Yuvaraj. And since, of course, it is Tuesday, it is one of our Throwback Tuesday episodes in which we are taking it back today to 2007 and talking about a neo-realist film starring non-actors. It's called Chop Shop.
I love when occasionally we have the opportunity to kind of talk about a movie that we know so little about or we've heard about but haven't really had the chance to watch. And, you know, among those, this is one of those that I'm so glad because of the show we collectively decided to throw back to this. Because the main reason we were led to doing Chop Shop was because we're going to be reviewing White Tiger tomorrow. And this is one of the director Ramin Bahrani's early films. And, you know, so underrated. I don't think I personally had heard about it before, but also so relevant, such a good film. I'm so glad we watched it. Well, I'm glad I watched it anyway.
Yeah, I think Our Situation is the best way to watch this movie. It's a movie that you have to buy into. I don't think it's a movie that you just put on and watch. It's one of those things that you go to film festivals for, maybe like TIFF or Sundance or Cannes or whatever it is. Or you have to be doing what we're doing and going into it for the sake of reviewing a film. Otherwise, I found as a movie on its own, like a standalone piece, it has very little purpose and very little to give. And in that sense, I don't know how much I enjoyed it. I'm glad we watched it because it is a good film as a piece of filmmaking, as a piece of entertainment, not so much.
Oh, that's interesting. So I liked it a lot, but I found it a tough watch. So it reminded me in some ways of something like City of God, because I think it's one thing to have a very gritty setting to take a look at poverty and its effects. It's quite another to involve children in it and to make them your primary protagonists. It's just kind of heartbreaking to watch how the world sometimes forces children to become really hardened, even as they remain children underneath. So the story itself is relatively simple, right? Basically, it's a boy and his sister, Ale and Izamar or Izzy, and they find refuge. I think they're both orphans. They find refuge in a chop shop. Hence the title. So basically, a place where cars are being getting bodywork done, getting repaired, and they have this dream of being able to save enough money. They're gonna buy their own food truck of sorts, fix it up, and then they're going to start a business. And so it's quite a simple story, but it's also just got so many hard knocks in it that there are times that it's difficult to watch.
City of God was absolutely the first film that came to mind about 15 minutes into this film for me. But what makes this movie so interesting is that unlike the usual films that you see about these subjects, which are set in the favelas of Brazil or the slums of India, this is actually set in New York. So, and I love that it takes you some time to process that's what you're watching. You know, Bahrani shoots the parts of New York, the streets that you never see on screen elsewhere, the way you see other third world countries being shot in these topics. And I think for me, that's what sort of clinched it as a I really liked this film. And for me, it was that dissonance of this is New York, this is, you know, Broadway and baseball games and rich people, but no, this is also New York. And there's something so sad and beautiful about the way the film is shot. The sort of yes, it's New York, but also it could be so many places in the world.
Yeah, so 20 minutes into the film, I actually had to Wikipedia that just to make sure it was New York, because I knew that I knew it was in Queens. But then like 20, 25 minutes in, I'm like, this looks nothing like any of the movies we see where they project Queens or New York or any of that part of the world, right? So I had to Wikipedia just to make sure that I got my facts right. So it's true, like 100%. He's showing you things that other filmmakers or other movies or even the media wouldn't show you about Queens and New York and stuff, which I appreciated like 100%. But I also felt like a movie like this, I felt could have worked better as a short film, because there's very little flesh in the film. It's more about atmosphere. It's more about building the characters, the people, the situation they are in, the roads, the shops, the places and stuff. But as a story, it's maybe worth about 20 minutes at most. And you could tell that story in 20 minutes. So I felt like the additional 1 hour, even though I appreciated the filmmaking, didn't do much to pad that story. So there's no momentum. It doesn't take you anywhere. It doesn't give you anything extra. For me, it was a bit difficult not only to watch and get through the story, but just to get through the movie as a piece, because I'm like, where exactly is this going?
So I think that what the movie does well, and what it does well in the time that it runs in, is that it creates a sense of claustrophobia. So all these things that we're talking about, right? The fact that, oh, this was New York, and oh, you know, it's taking place in one of the wealthiest cities in the world in some ways. But the movie itself never really leaves the street, you know. So the street that it's set on, sometimes you get as far as the stadium, which is sort of over across the way. It takes place inside the shop. There's also this one street where you have, you know, that sex work is happening, and that's sort of another location. But really, the characters' lives just revolve around this space, seeing the same people every day, doing the same things on a daily basis, and having those day-to-day struggles. And so I think that where it earns the length for me, the duration of the film, is not so much in whether or not there was enough story to tell. I think it was in being able to flesh out the characters and this slice of life in a really meaningful way, at least for me. Like, I totally get it. The story has, in terms of no momentum, I think that's totally true. But you have to be willing, I guess, to invest in the dreams of Ale. And because I was sort of there, I was like, okay, I want this to happen for you. I was willing to sit there and kind of be with the film.
Yeah, I'm on Lynn's side with this. I didn't mind that there was no resolution or no sort of forward momentum for the film, because the way the film immerses you in these characters' lives is so well done. So some of those are things you would see in a lot of indie filmmaking. So handheld camera, street eye level shooting, but also the fact that they use non-actors, right? So the main character, Ale, who's just so good, he's so watchable. He's played by a boy named Alejandro Polanco. His sister's played by Isamar Gonzalez. If I'm not mistaken, there's only one real actor in the whole film. And even the people in the chop shop, a lot of people on the streets were real people who lived in those areas. So I think for me, the reason I was willing to invest in that space was because it also felt a little bit like a documentary almost.
Mm-hmm.
And then in those documentaries, there are these moments of real, there's this just lovely scene when his sister first moves in to stay with him, because he's basically the breadwinner, right? And
yep.
She moves in and he sort of set up his little apartment above the chop shop, and he's so happy that he's come to stay with her. It was hands down, like, I came away remembering that scene so much, that there was something very moving about being allowed into these characters' lives in a way that felt respectful. And it almost felt like if there was going to be a resolution, it would make that disrespectful in a way.
I think the thing that I appreciated the most is that, I mean, obviously this is a commentary on bigger issues. It's not just about Alejandro. It's not just about like Isama. It's not just about that, the chop shop, right? So there are bigger things going on. It's about poverty. It's about the social divide. It's very Bong Joon-ho in that sense. And we'll talk about that more, I think, in White Tiger. He has like a pattern going on here in the stories that he picks. So in that sense, I really appreciated it, because there is this sort of comparison comparison they do with the stadium. And you see the events that are going on in the stadium, and it becomes very clear about what he's trying to say about, you know, where people live and how they live, right? So in that sense, yes, I could get invested, because the more you see that, the more you sympathize or even empathize with the lead characters. It's just that I felt that it was not punchy enough, which you know, it's subjective. So, you know, some people enjoy it, some people don't. But yeah, the social commentary stuff is pretty powerful, I thought.
We're talking today about 2007's Chop Shop, which is a film that was shot very much in a realist style, starring non-actors all the way through. There isn't even a cameo to be had from a recognizable face. And it was co-written, edited, directed by Ramin Bahrani, whose latest movie is something that we'll be discussing tomorrow, which is why we're throwing back to this. Let us know, do you enjoy slice of life movies? Do you enjoy movies that have this sort of edge of social commentary? And do you have some favorites? You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can, of course, also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
Did she go to the safe home? I want to know if my sister's there.
What's up? How you doing?
It's gonna go Izzy's van. Your name on the bottom.
Why your name gotta be so big?
Because it's gonna be my van.
All right, this is how it's gonna go. My name goes on the van and you pick the color. And I hold the money because you don't know how to count.
What are you talking about?
You never even finished school.
At least I finished 10th grade. You didn't go to school.
Alec, what are you still doing up?
I need to know who was upstairs today.
Why?
Because I'm missing money.
Alec, hold on.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin, and together today we are throwing back to Chop Shop, which is a 2007 movie from Ramin Bahrani. And I wanted to talk about one of the things that I found most moving about it, which was, I think, the moments in which the children were allowed to be children, or in which you remember, you recalled that no matter how much a grown man is yelling at him to change a tire or to grab a mirror, you know, you're really looking at a 12-year-old kid. And I think, Sharmila, when you spoke earlier about him him meeting his sister, or even at the, from the beginning when he's trying to look for her, and the pure joy that he feels in having her there, in wanting to know where she is, in wanting to provide for her so that they can be together, I found that very moving.
The whole film for me, I think, was moving because it's so matter of fact. So many scenes. There's the scene where Alejandro and his friend Carlos throw shopping carts off a high ledge. You know, it's so simple. They don't play it up. And I think that's what I liked about this film. I know, Arvin, earlier you said you wish it was more punchy, and I get it. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a different film. I think this film is not interested in building those peaks and valleys, because it's so slice of life that that matter of factness feels so familiar, so that these moments end up feeling moving precisely because they are not played to be moving.
Yeah, true. So I'm comparing it with stuff from primarily A24. So A24 is not an indie studio, but it is the most indie studio among the other studios. And they normally do films like this about, and also like very heavy themes, you know, it can be any one of these big themes that they choose and pick, and then they put it into a film. Right, so I'm looking at those films and how they sort of move very quickly or move at a pace that is comfortable, and they don't sort of rely on the old school way of doing indie films. This relies on the old school way of doing indie films. This is a very film festival thing, which is completely fine. My closest comparison is actually the Florida Project, I think, in terms of pacing and even characters, because it's another film with kids. And you see kids being kids, but at the same time, you see kids struggling with adult problems. And it's very apparent here as well that he has to deal with a lot of things that kids, no one who's 12 years old should know any of these things. No one who's 12 years old should be selling the kind of DVDs that he's selling, or working in a chop shop the way he does, or even staying in a room like the one that he's staying in. So that I completely understood. It was very, very tough to watch. I'm also surprised that Alejandro didn't go on to make other movies like this. He has one other project that he made in 2010, but other than that, nothing. Like, he sort of like dropped off the map.
Yeah, and I get that, because the performances are really uniformly very good. I think sometimes with non-actors, there is this... that's the thing, right, about putting actors into a documentary-mockumentary segment. Sometimes you can tell that they're acting. And similarly, sometimes you get real people into a fiction. And you're like, okay, this is a bit too real. And I think that they really strike that balance of it being very, very moving, very heartwarming, but at the same time, very convincing. You watch it and at no point do you think, hold on, you know, I'm not completely sold on this. And I think a lot of that also has to do with A, the skill of the performances, the humaneness of them, but also of the chemistry between everybody.
So apparently a lot of the scenes, the cinematographer and the director wouldn't tell them that they were already filming. So they'd kind of know what was going to happen in the scene. They'd know the lines they were supposed to say, but then they wouldn't, there's no cut and, you know, wrap. Sometimes he would take the camera really far away and then just let these characters sort of interact and film from a distance. So there are lots of things as to why I think this works and it feels so natural. Apparently even dialogue, they were given sort of the gist of what they're supposed to say, but they were just allowed to say it how they would normally say these things. And you can see the value of filming like that. But I think precisely because of that is why maybe actors like them, or rather non-actors like them, didn't do much else, because that's not a process that would work in Hollywood otherwise, right?
So speaking of things that are natural, right, the my favorite scene in this film, which like amazed me, and I was like kind of like, I don't know why I was so mind blown by it, but I was mind blown. There's a scene halfway through the movie where a bunch of pigeons are just eating off the side of the road. And they get the pigeons to come and eat off the side of the road by feeding it like bird feed, right? And I'm thinking a film like this, like an indie film, this had to be real, because there's no way they got like animal wranglers or trainers or whatever you call them to get a bunch of pigeons to do what the pigeons did. So obviously they went to an actual location and they found a location that had actual pigeons in it. And then they got so comfortable around these pigeons with their cameras that they just shot it. People feeding pigeons bird feed. And I don't know why, but that sort of solidified this as like you guys said, like a documentary style film, because you had to be so on the ground to get that to happen. Because otherwise, how would you know? Like, or where would you even plan to get these birds, like a flock of birds, to come and eat something off the pavement and then shoot it for a film? It's very guerrilla style, and I loved it.
I felt that way about the weather, because there were times in which the weather played a huge role, right? Again, the comparisons to Parasite, to Bong Joon-ho are very much there, because in Parasite, the rain and a moment where there is a flood plays just this tremendous pivotal moment in the movie. And in this same way, in this film, when it was raining, I'm like, you guys don't have the budget to fake the rain, you know? So I don't know what you did. You had to wait for a day. You had to, I don't know. So I really enjoyed it. I do, however, think that to circle it all the way back to something that Arvind said at the beginning, I'm wondering whether these movies are always meant to be indie, whether they are forever by their nature consigned to the indie pile, simply because I think it's a hard sell, you know, stories that are heartrending, that are difficult, that have non-actors, like a lot of things are piled up against it. It was made with a camera that I think you can just buy, you know, you don't actually have to belong to a studio to get. I don't know. I think that social movies are a hard sell to begin with, unless you package it as something else like Parasite. Do you guys think that this is forever indie? Social justice movies are forever only going to be indie movies when done in this style.
I'm going to do what Arvind normally does in most of our shows, which is to say, I think this is where streaming is a blessing. I really think streaming has done so much for documentaries, for instance. You know, people are willing to watch documentaries on a streaming service when they wouldn't go to a cinema to watch it. And I think that this sort of a film, it, to my knowledge, it hasn't yet come to a streaming service where it's available. There are DVDs and things like that. But these kinds of films sit so well, I think, within a streaming service where people can choose to watch it. They can choose to pause if they need a break. But ultimately, you can also package it and sell it in a certain way that you know, people feel sort of like, oh, cool, I discovered something nobody else knows. So I think that's where it sits well.
So as far as I know, in some locations, Prime started to show this because they knew that White Tiger was showing on Netflix. So they sort of packaged it that way. They were showing the same filmmakers, older films, but on their streaming services. So it's you're right. It's like streaming services can benefit from this a lot. And I think people can benefit from it being on streaming services. But then again, I don't think indie films like this have to exist anymore, because by default and by the technology that we have, they shouldn't look like this. It's a film from 2007. And in 2007, it's okay for a film to behave and to move this way. But I brought up A24 before. Films can easily look like A24 films, and films can easily look way more posh and way more technologically advanced just by using smartphones and stuff we have in our pocket. So in a way, I think films like this are kind of extinct. And if they end up looking this way, I think it's on purpose, which I don't know why anyone would, you know, do this on purpose, other than not having the technology. But yeah,
for style,
yeah, I don't think they exist anymore today.
Yeah, I forgot which year it was until everyone was using a flip phone. Everyone, literally everyone. And I thought, okay, fine. Yes, 2007. Okay, we're talking today about Chop Shop. Have you seen it? And do you like movies that have a social message at their heart? Is that something you enjoy? Do you have recommendations you want to share? You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.